This is A-State Connections and Create at State, making connections that count. I'm your host for the podcast, Jonathan Reeves. Today we go back to the Create at State Virtual Symposium to hear more research from students. This research comes from the Neil Griffin College of Business at Arkansas State University. Three presentations are featured today. The first is from Bryce Jefferson, and this is his presentation titled, "The Sky is Falling as Rivers Rise, Adapting to Increased Rainfall Along the Mississippi River Basin."
All right, and here's just an overview of the Mississippi River Basin. It's very important for agriculture, not for just our country, but also for the world. And it's got notable tributaries, including the Missouri, Arkansas, and Ohio rivers. So the International Panel on Climate Change comes out with a report every 7 years, so we'll be expecting one next year. And in their 2014 report, they found that in 1951, there's a shift of different things, including increases in global temperatures and sea levels that are rising at an increasing rate after 1951. Part of this research wanted to see if that held true for rainfall totals within the Mississippi River Basin. So in order to determine whether 1951 is a year of significance, I took 100 years worth of rainfall data and split it at 1951. So this map shows the regression pre-1951, and it shows the annual increase in rainfall totals for each state. All right, so this map is a regression model from 1951 onto the most recent data. And as you can see, the increases are greater annually than previous to 1951. So this shows that 1951 is a significant year. So using all this information, I've created three different sort of predictions for what type of rainfall we might be seeing in the future. So we've got the breakpoint regression, which includes the 1951 to the present. That is probably the most accurate model there is. And then I just put a linear regression for the entire 100 years worth of data and a historical average, kind of just to show perspective and to contrast the different models. So using the rainfall totals that I gathered, I did a cross-sectional analysis with the cost data from FEMA, along with a CBO estimate that shows that FEMA costs probably make around 27% of all total flood cost, to create a regression analysis that shows if it rains a certain number of inches, how much cost we can expect. So now that I've identified a problem, you kind of got to figure out what are we going to do about it. And there are two different strategies. We can either mitigate the problem or we can adapt to the problem. So mitigating tries to look at what's causing the problem. In this case, it would be climate change. And we try to fix that problem. But that takes a political consensus that people think climate change is real. People don't. So we kind of are forced to go to an adaptation sort of method. So we're looking at the result and we're trying to change the outcome. So we know it's flooding. So maybe we'll implement some strategies to prevent flooding. Here are some adaptation strategies to change how we deal with increased rainfall. We can restrict development in flood zones, we could change the National Flood Insurance Program, and we can increase infrastructure spending along the Mississippi River Basin. So a good method for dealing with this is restricting development in floodplains. If there are no developments in floodplains, there's no damage from flooding. So in order to do this, we would have to give FEMA more power to regulate, and probably one of their regulations should be to require the main structure to be above peak flood height, and that would prevent a lot of flood damage. So we can also change the National Flood Insurance Program. Currently, the NFIP pays out more in benefits than it collects in premiums, and that's really not a viable option for insurance. We really should want those premiums to better reflect the risk that those people are taking on by developing in floodplains. And another thing that we should be doing is increasing infrastructure spending. So the American Society of Civil Engineers rates our dams and levees at a D and D plus respectively. And that's pretty bad. So it would take probably about $35.4 billion to fix the levee system within the Mississippi River Basin. But that's something that's worth the cost because $35.4 billion is significantly less than the expected flood cost that I have detailed previously using each of the methods. So a quick recap, rainfall is increasing within the Mississippi River Basin, which will cause increased flooding, and adapting to the flooding will reduce costs.
and that was Bryce Jefferson. Next are Melanie Ricker and Alexis Leonard, and this is their presentation titled Scarlet to Black, a comprehensive student-led approach to financial literacy.
Hello, I'm Alexis Leonard.
And I'm Melanie Ricker.
And this is our project, Scarlet to Black, a comprehensive student-led approach to financial literacy. Scarlet to Black is our on-campus financial literacy program, and we are two of the student peer mentors. Something we do at the beginning of the year is send out a survey to all freshmen with general and financial literacy questions. Looking at past survey questions gave us the idea for our hypothesis. We hypothesize that students who have at least one immediate family member with post-secondary education will have better financial actions and financial literacy than those who do not. Our thoughts were that students with an immediate family member with post-secondary education will have more knowledge about financial decisions due to that family member's experience with topics such as student loans and all the different costs of attending post-secondary educational institutions, therefore having better financial actions and financial literacy.
Dr. Tu let us survey his three classes, which consisted of all classifications in a variety of majors. Some of our survey questions were general questions, such as classification, major, age, high school graduation year. Three of our questions asked about the education of immediate family members. Two asked what level of education your guardians received, and the third asked what level of education your most educated sibling received. The options ranged from some high school to doctoral degree, with added choices of unknown and not applicable. We also asked where they got most of their college information, with options for family members, teachers, friends, the internet, and more. We then followed it with questions such as, where do you live this semester? How much was your housing? What meal plan did you choose? How much was your meal plan? Here are more questions we asked with not applicable, I don't know, and type in options. We also asked about checking and savings accounts as well as cash carried. We ended the survey asking about credit cards, credit line, and credit card debt. After collecting a total of 110 student responses, we looked at the responses of different categories. Those who got most of their college information from family members, mother or guardian one without a post-secondary degree, mother or guardian one with a post-secondary degree, father or guardian two without a post-secondary degree, father or guardian two with a post-secondary degree, sibling without a post-secondary degree, sibling with a post-secondary degree, both parents or guardians without a post-secondary degree, and both parents or guardians with a post-secondary degree. You can see all of those options on the y-axis of the bar graphs and the percents on the x-axis. The questions asked are at the top. The red bar represents students who knew an approximation of the cost. The blue bar represents students who did not know, and the purple bar represents students who did not apply to the question. The number of students in our survey without a checking account is very small, which is good. Everyone needs a checking account. There are a higher number of students, though, who don't have a savings account. About half of our participants do not have a credit card. As you can see, the results were not significant. It doesn't seem to matter the education of immediate family members. The question responses are about the same for everyone, rejecting our hypothesis of students who have at least one immediate family member with post-secondary education having better financial actions and financial literacy than those who do not.
We want to improve the financial literacy of A-State students. Here are some workshops we have put on throughout this year. We discussed how students can be prepared for next year, include talking to your advisor, choosing your classes, and signing up for housing and a meal plan. We had budgeting workshops for Black Friday and dating. One of our more popular workshops was about investment basics. A few more included budgeting basics, how to fill out the FAFSA, how to protect your identity, and free services on campus and around Jonesboro. At the end of our workshops, we ask our students to fill out a survey to give feedback as well as making financial goals, and we regularly follow up with the students. Scarlet to Black aims to provide a team of peer mentors to guide students and improve their financial literacy.
That was Melanie Ricker and Alexis Leonard. The final presentation for today is from Ahad Sanjrani. His presentation is Preventing Student Burnout and Fallout, the Role of Psychological Capital and How It Affects Freshmen.
Hey everyone, so this year at Create A-State, I would like to present my research that I've been working on with Dr. Hillary Schleimer. So we've been working on student burnout and its effect on freshmen. And to kind of do a brief overview, Burnout affects a lot of students, specifically freshmen in college. And burnout is a response to emotional, social, and physical stress and different kinds of stressors. And psychological capital plays a major role where it talks about is a cognitive emotional tool that helps students kind of deal with this issue of getting less burnt out in college and how it affects them. So stressors leads to burnout, and burnout includes physical and human exhaustion is the theory that I discussed by Moslog and Jackson, which is 1986. When students improve, like get high amount of stress and they're unable to manage stress and they don't know what to do, their performance goes down. And more likely when performance goes down, they tend to drop out of school. So that is what I discussed in my literature review. And when it came down to my hypothesis development, I discussed how psychological capital helps reduce stress and burnout. Positivity is the key to being a successful student in college. And freshman year, it's difficult to understand because a lot of times students are overwhelmed with what's going on. And in my opinion, psychological capital and intrinsic motivation helps student performance and can go a long way and not lead to exhaustion, which is bad in the long and short run for students, especially with freshmen in college. The method and analysis that I used was 194 college freshmen and at the Neil Griffin College of Business. And for stressors, we used the Godzilla theory. For burnout, we used Cohen and Hoberman. And psychological capital, we used the Gerald and Kelly theory. And we make sure to get the students' ID numbers for information like GPA and retention status and see kind of like how the students are doing. And hypothesis H1 and H2A were tested using a linear regression, and 2B was tested using a logistic regression. So when it comes down to results, table 1 and table 2 were what we kind of used to simplify. Table 1 provides a descriptive statistics of burnout, stressors, and psychological capital and how academic performance was going to affect them in the spring semester. And in table 2, there are significantly negative correlations between psychological capital and both stress. And our preliminary analysis do not seem to support H2B as the main psychological capital for students who retain. And it does not seem practical from those the score who do not return to school. However, further analysis need to be made on these preliminary findings. And to discuss this whole issue and these results, I would like to talk about how implications for university administrators and counselors and instructors who seek to improve the lives of students and maintain financial viable enrollment numbers. As our preliminary results suggest, psychological capital and intrinsic motivation can help students with as an emotional resource to perform well in schools. There are interventions used in the workplace and psychological capital that could be adapted to university settings to improve students and their performance and help them reduce burnout. What can we do for students not to get burnt out, but also learn and have a good experience in college? Such interventions and resources could help students reduce their stress level and also go and improve their college experience. Lastly, I would like to say thank you for allowing me the opportunity to present at Create A State. And I would like to end by saying, by providing my references and to do a brief overview on my references is the Moslog burnout, the Godzilla, the Cohen, and then neutralizing job stressors, Luthans, and a Journal of Organizational Behavior, and Parrish P, where it is providing a coaching framework for developing the psychological capital of a global mindset. And thank you very much.
Today we heard from students in the Neil Griffin College of Business at Arkansas State University. Don't forget to subscribe to the Created State podcast at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Also subscribe to the new KASU app. You can find that on iTunes and download it. Just search KASU app. You can also go to Google Play to be able to get that as well. Makes it easy for you to find the Created State podcast. And tell others about the Created State podcast and leave us a 5-star review. This is KASU and A-State Connections. I'm Jonathan Reeves.